Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Justin Skizik in Boise, Idaho. Justin has multifocal acquired motor axonopathy, a very rare genetic condition triggered by a car accident at the age of 16. Today, he's 46 and is co-founder with his best friend, Patrick Gray, of Push Inc., which helps people understand the value of community. Justin recently spoke to the Cure Duchenne Futures Conference in Orlando, Florida. Thank you for being with us.
You bet, man. Appreciate it.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
I guess I could start from the 30,000-foot view. So born and raised in Eastern Oregon, right on the Oregon-Idaho border. And I have, as you mentioned, a progressive neuromuscular disease that is very similar to ALS. So I live life in a wheelchair every day. I have to be helped in many aspects of my life, where like eating, bathroom, getting clothes on, in and out of bed, everything. But it doesn't really stop me from living life. And, you know, I'm also married. I have been married for 22 years now, father of three. And I have a pug who's not exactly the smartest dog in the world, but he's a ball full of heart. That is a very quick nutshell of me personally. Yeah.
That's a nice introduction. Obviously, you together with Patrick were keynote speakers, motivational speakers at the Cure Duchenne Futures Conference in Orlando. And of course, I know that you have done many such speeches. I'm wondering if speaking to a group of parents and boys with Duchenne muscular dystrophy resonated in any particular way for you.
Oh, absolutely. Patrick and I have, you know, over the last several years, I've had the ability to speak for, you know, a lot of audiences and varied audiences from, you know, different verticals like, or industries like healthcare to education, financial, tech, I mean, everything. I mean, it was, the connection was almost immediate. Because when you have a room full of parents and kids that are dealing with really tough diseases and really challenging times in their lives, you know, they get it. It was almost like preaching to the choir in a way. And so you can feel it in the room. You can feel it in the conversations. You can just know that for us, it just meant a lot to be there and to know that the audience knew what we're going, you know, what I've been through, even though I don't have Duchenne, you know, I have a disease that does get worse over time and will eventually probably take my life at some point. So when you kind of juxtapose the conference with other ones that we've spoken at, you know, a lot of people just don't really get it. I mean, you can explain it to them. You can understand, you know, they'll kind of get to a certain degree, but you just know immediately once we got on stage that people knew exactly what we're going through. And so that was probably the biggest takeaway for Patrick and I, that it's just the connection was just, for us, it felt like just we were meant to be there.
Very profound. Did you get a chance to speak with any of the boys who have Duchenne?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had quite a few conversations. We did some wheelchair racing. We talked with, man, I can't even tell you how many I talked with, but just talking with them about just how they're doing and what their life is like and, you know, what they enjoy doing. And it was really great.
That raises a question, because as you well know, Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a progressively fatal disease. And although the life expectancy of Duchenne patients has increased substantially since research began, you know, many years ago, still there is no cure. Given that you're a motivational speaker, what particular message do you think you would offer to both boys with Duchenne and their parents who take care of them? And specifically with regard to how to approach a progressive disease like this?
Yeah, I would say probably the biggest thing that I could pass on would be you can't do it alone. I mean, this is speaking to the families. This is also speaking to the boys as they're growing up. You know, I'm speaking from my personal experience here. It's a horrible diagnosis. There's no way around that. It just is. And so the question then becomes, how do you best maximize the time that you have? And it really is a lesson that we can all take away, right? Not just with families and boys with Duchenne, but everybody. Like, how do we maximize our lives? And for me, one of the, I wouldn't say it's the cure, but it is a tool in my toolkit is, and that's a really crude way of saying, you need to allow people to help you in your life. When you allow people to help you, you are giving them the best gift that you can give them, which is absolute joy and love. And that's where humanity can intersect. I've met so many families and people that outside of Duchenne, for sure. I mean, just dealing with people living with cancer or other things, they go into like this little silo of life. They think by being just by myself and living this little siloed life, then I'm not a burden upon anybody else, which is in my mind is the complete opposite of how you can really thrive.
That brings me to your documentary and the subject of your talk, I'll Push You itself, is obviously very inspirational for anybody, you know, able, disabled, or whatever. I want to ask specifically about that. I mean, hiking the Camino de Santiago, even if you're completely healthy, that's quite an effort. 500 miles, I was tired just watching this. Where did you guys get the idea, first of all, to do this, and secondly, to do it with him pushing you in a wheelchair?
So, to give a little bit of context for those who aren't, you know, listening that aren't really, or reading that really don't understand what the Camino is, it's an ancient pilgrimage that's in Spain. It's in northwest corner of Spain, and there's many routes you can take. We took what's called the French Way, which is about 500 miles. And I learned about it through watching PBS. Rick Steves is a travel guy on PBS, and I just learned about it through that. And I just knew it was something that I needed to do. And the best way I can just, it's, I don't know if you've ever had those moments in your life where you don't have any, it's not a clear trajectory of like, okay, I have all the answers and to make this decision. You just know, like you just know intuitively, this is what you need to do. And that was what happened in my case. And, you know, I asked Pat, who's my best friend. We've known each other literally our whole lives. We were born 36 hours apart, same hospital. So I asked him and he said, yeah, I'll push you. That's how it kind of birthed. And in the beginning, it was just Patrick and I wanting to just do this. It was nothing, no movie, no books, nothing. It was just Pat and I, just two idiots.
Was this a religious thing? Is it a faith-based kind of pilgrimage for you? Or was it just an adventure, a challenge that you saw and you said, I want to do this?
For me, it was more of a challenge. It is Catholic in origin, even though I'm not a Catholic. A lot of people take the pilgrimage for many reasons, you know, religious, spiritual connection, processing. Maybe they're going through something tough in their lives or whatever. But in my case, it was more of, to be blunt, I really didn't know why. It was more of, I would go, okay, should I do this? And I'm going to try to do this. So I'd probably say it would probably fall in the bucket of just a challenge to do something, which is completely outside of my wheelhouse. Like I am not an adventurer by nature. I don't do crazy hikes. I don't do these kind of things.
You're not an adventurer by nature? This is you saying this?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I am like more happy sitting on a beach or a poolside somewhere. I mean, that's my thing. And
so how did you get the idea that you'd be able to do this? You did have help here and there, but clearly watching the documentary, it's obvious that this was an enormous struggle.
Oh, of course.
And many times you guys wanted to give up.
So to answer your question, we never really thought about it as, I mean, Pat and I was just like, we're going to try this thing and see if we can make it. I mean, it was literally just that kind of blind faith and stepping into something together to see if we can make it. I mean, that was literally the bar that we were at. I mean, how we made it was to be determined.
So you didn't plan originally to write a book. You did not plan to make a documentary, movie, film, nothing. How did that, I'm interested how that came about, because obviously in making this documentary, you brought along a camera crew, yeah. You had to bring along sound people, obviously you had to bring along support people to make this documentary possible.
So how that all came about was, and it's a crazy kind of year or two that I had. My wife and I decided to move to Italy for a few months and with our kids and all that. And so I was already in the motion of all of that. And so Pat and I made the decision. I said, okay, we'll talk about this when I get back and we'll make a plan on whatever. And during that period of time, Patrick worked in healthcare. He was an administrator at this healthcare system here in Idaho, very large system. And his boss, Ed Castlevine, who's actually in the movie, Ed is the most amazing guy. I'd never met him before until later, but Pat and him were talking one day at a company barbecue or whatever. And Pat saw this guy on a wheelchair going by. And he's like, well, I guess I should ask my boss about getting 6 weeks off, because to ask your boss for 6 weeks off consecutively is a big ask. And so he asked his boss, and his boss said, all right. He said, I'll do everything in my power to get you time off, but you need to promise me you need to document this.
Oh, that's how this came about.
And so Pat was like, why? And Ed said, because if you don't, you're selfish and you're irresponsible. There's too much hope not to share it. And so Ed had this foresight to see something in this thing that Pat and I had yet to do. And he's like, but you need to document it. And so Pat called me. I got the time off, but we need to document this thing. And so being in, you know, as I mentioned, I was a former graphic designer. Yeah. And in that field, you have adjacent fields, right? You have like multimedia and video and other things like that. And so a college buddy of mine, Terry Parrish, who's a owner of a video agency in San Diego, I reached out to him and said, hey, I want to do this thing. Told him about the whole journey. And he said, we need to document it. Can you, well, what do you think? And he's like, we're in. And so that point on, we had much bigger plans of what ended up being in the end, but we had to do fundraising. We did grassroots. In the end, I mean, what the movie and the journey, I mean, and the book, it is literally a miracle. It was a miracle that we even made it. It was a miracle that it was even completed. It was a miracle that we even had the crew put together. I mean, our crew was assembled very, very last minute. And we almost pulled the plug a few times. I mean, it's a much longer story, but
35 days. And just to put things in perspective, how many people actually joined you along the way? And how many people have seen the documentary and bought the book?
I can't answer how many people have seen the documentary. I have no idea. A lot. I know we've sold quite a few books. We're in the probably 60 to 70,000 copies of our book, which is great. As far as people helping us along the way, we literally lost count after 150 people. We don't really talk about it too much, but I only asked one person to help. One. On day one, it was one person that we were really struggling. It's not an easy thing, as you mentioned, by foot, but doing it in a wheelchair is much, much more challenging.
And probably a lot of people were surprised to see you doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We got a lot of looks and all that.
They've never seen anybody in a wheelchair trying to do this.
We're nuts. Like, it was absolutely insane. And people that have walked the Camino, that know it and have done it, we get that all the time. People will come by and be like, how did you do that? Because there's sections where it was hard for me to get through. How did you guys get through that? And the answer is one step at a time.
I wanted to ask you, what was the single hardest thing about this effort?
Being away from my family. That was the hardest thing for me. I mean, I could deal with, Pat and I could deal with physical struggles. We could deal with the lack of sleep and all that stuff. It was just being away from our families. I mean, I know Pat had his struggles and you learn it by watching the movie and reading the book. I'll Push You. That's the title of each of those. But for me, it was, I'm a family man. I love being with my wife and my kids. And it was 35 days of walking, but we were in Spain about 5-6 days prior to that. Or in France, I'm sorry. So we were gone for a while.
Everybody met you at the finish line and greeted you.
Yeah.
That was
profound. It's crazy.
Justin, I'm sure this will resonate with people who see this and read this, and especially with the Duchenne community, which deals with struggles and challenges every day. Thank you so much for talking with us. Appreciate your time. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you so much for listening.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.